It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Hey, welcome everybody to Money for Lunch. Listen, we're trying some new stuff, so hopefully the sound quality is good. We want to have good sound quality. The most important thing about an audio, you know, podcast / radio show is that the audio is good. So hopefully the audio is good, and we're going to be trying, new things. So if you're on Facebook, we're going to start broadcasting our show live on Facebook. So that's going to be fun. And what else? What else are we doing? Oh, we're doing a lot of stuff. Great. All right. So, hey, real quick, before we get our show on the road, so to speak, I want to, I want to talk about, all right, so Use, one of our segment producers, saying that we may not be having good sound quality here. So could be bad. I don't know. So we're going to do this so we don't waste a bunch of dead air. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We're going to sound check, and then we'll be right back.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Bro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. So it sounds like, looks like the sound's okay. And in a couple of seconds, we're going to bring on our first guest, Tara Long, here. But I wanted to cover this. Look, it's closing the end of the year, right? Which is, first of all, freaking me out, you know, man, you know, it took forever to go from the age of 13 to 20. That just seemed like, oh my gosh, that took forever. It seemed a lot longer than 7 years. You know, it just seemed like it was going at a snail's pace, right? And then to go from 20 to 25, that was, you know, I guess a normal amount of time, whatever it seemed by, but to go from 25 to 50, or in my case, 50 plus, was like a friggin' blink of an eye or two blinks of an eye. So, time flies. Here we are, the end of 2016. We have a new administration kicking in, and a lot of people are starting to think about what they have yet to accomplish, what they haven't accomplished, and what they will accomplish in 2017. So I want to talk about goals. Goals are so important. So here are my tips. First of all, write them down. If you're not willing to write them down, then you're not willing to achieve them. That's number one. Number two, they have to be big. The bigger, the better. So here's an example. I am so grateful that I'm a New York Times bestselling author. Now, I'm currently not a New York Times bestselling author, but I read that goal and I write it down on a daily basis, right? And so I use door hangers and I put that goal everywhere. It's in my rearview mirror. It's in my shower, laminated. It's all over. It's all over. So I put all my goals where I can see them, read them, interact with them all the time. And as you can tell, I put them in the in the current tense. What is it? The future tense. Present tense. Thank you. Present tense. So I am so grateful to be a New York Times bestselling author. And I can feel that. It's clear to me. I believe it. And therefore, I know I will achieve it. Now, I got a new book coming out called Dominating Your Mind, available at dominatingyourmind.com. And so it's not ready for launch with the websites up, but we're still giving it some TLC. It's got some, you know, so we're not ready for an official launch yet. But I know that in 2017, my goal is to become a New York Times bestselling author. I'm going to do whatever I can to do that. And this is a little bit of a challenge because in order to achieve your goals, in 99% of the cases, you must have a clear target. Well, the New York Times people will not tell me how many books I need to sell. It's a secret. They have come out and said, no, it's a well-kept secret. We don't tell that to anybody. So, you know, I've heard some people tell me it's 25,000 copies a week for like 10 weeks. I've heard some people tell me it's 100,000 copies within a two-week period. And again, the people at New York Times won't tell me at all. So this is going to be a little bit more of a challenge. So I am aiming for 25,000 copies of sales per week for at least 10 weeks. I think that's kind of reasonable, but I could be completely wrong. We will find out. Worst case scenario, if I don't hit my big goal, where would it land? Will it be a Wall Street bestseller? Would it be at Barnes & Noble? Absolutely guaranteed to be an Amazon bestseller? Who knows what's going to happen, but that's the goal I'm going for. It keeps me up at night. It motivates me. I can't stop thinking about it. That is what a big goal will do for you. It will motivate you and keep you focused. And the clearer you are, the easier it is to be focused. All right. I'm coming off the soapbox. I'm going to hit the go button here on our show today and get Tara Long on the show. Tara Long, known as the Health Alchemist, and I'm excited to have her on the show. As you guys know, health is very important to all of us, but certainly it's one of my tenets of success. There's no point in being wealthy without healthy. To me, it's not, you know, it's all part of the same thing. Like I said, Tara Long is the Health Alchemist, about awakening your inner healer, transformational coach, masters of acupuncture and oriental medicine, licensed acupuncturist and Chinese herbalist, nutrition, energy work, hypnotherapist. Tara Long, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
You bet. You bet. It's good to have you here. Mm-hmm. You know, I think health is such a vitally important thing. And I think that in today's society, we're overwhelmed with health information and choices, and we don't know what to do. So it's good to have you on the show.
Thank you. Yes. And I totally hear you. I hear that from my clients and my patients all the time. And they're very confused.
Absolutely. And you know what? What's even so more insidious, and this is, you know, I know that our government doesn't have enough people and it's busy and all that other stuff, but this is where the government really needs to step in and shut down. There are so many foods out there that are packaged and labeled as healthy, mm-hmm. and they're not. You know, they're full of chemicals,
right.
Primarily sugar, and people wonder why diabetes and obesity is running rampant in our society. When even if the food says healthy for you, it's actually not, and the government allows that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot that goes into that, and food and diet, of course, is a huge part of health. It's just one piece, but it's definitely a huge part, and it's a great place to start for most folks. Mm-hmm.
Sure. Let's talk about this.
Yeah.
When you say awaken your inner healer, you know, let's talk about that. What does that mean to you?
Yes. Thank you. That's a great question. I believe that we all have the power inside of ourselves to heal our own bodies. So, well, as we know that when we get a cut or a scrape or something like that, our body heals itself, right? We get a scar, you know, a scab, it comes off, and so on and so forth. So we know that our body has the ability to heal itself. And this is also true for more quote unquote chronic, you know, dis-ease in the body, whether you've been diagnosed with something or you're tired all the time or you suffer from, you know, migraine headaches or even anxiety and depression. All of these things, we actually have a choice and how that looks and how that happens. And so when I say awaken your inner healer, it really means to tap into that inherent power within you that comes from a very deep, still place that knows exactly what you need to do to heal yourself. So you actually have all the answers inside of you, and that may include looking at your diet. You know, what are you eating? Are you drinking enough water? Very simple things like that. But it may also include things like, am I allowing enough time in my life for, you know, for myself, for self-care, for stillness, for meditation, for connecting with nature? Am I in a relationship that's serving me? Am I in a job that's serving me? So on and so forth. So really the healing aspects are not just physical, but also mental, emotional, and spiritual.
Yeah, and I like what you say there about having the time, making the time for, you know, some alone time, some meditation, some, you know, just really to unplug and shut down, shut some of the noise down. I think that sometimes we don't do that enough, right? Between our phones and all our devices and,
right.
and the go-go, what do you call it, type of atmosphere
right.
that we've created.
Yes.
We've overlooked the simplicity of just being still and being quiet.
Yeah, of just being, of being a human being versus a human doing, right? We're not human doings. So, yeah.
Let's talk about this. I want to get your thoughts on this. In your opinion, what kind of, let's say, diseases or issues can people heal themselves from? I want your thoughts on this.
Yeah, thank you. That's the short answer is, there is nothing that one cannot heal themselves from. And I am able to say that because I've seen it in my practice and I've witnessed it. I myself have healed from chronic fatigue syndrome and, you know, and ulcers and things like that. So it's not even about what it is that the person is trying to heal from. It's about, are they allowing the healing? Are they, you know, what is their intention? Are they doing the work? Because you do have to do the work of healing and also believing that it's possible. So, I mean, I've seen everything from chronic, you know, from like we were talking about diabetes earlier and depression and anxiety and chronic fatigue syndrome, those autoimmune disorders, and even cancer.
Yeah. You know what? It's amazing to me, 'cause you're right. We have heard these stories of people healing themselves from all these terrible diseases. But let me ask you this. What do you think is the difference between, you know, these individual, let's say, miracles, if you will, and let's say some people, the rest of us, for lack of better terms, who can't heal ourselves?
Yeah.
Is it just a mindset thing?
Yeah, so that's a very multi-layered question. There's a lot of factors that go
sure.
into it, but I will say the one of the things that I see is owning your power versus feeling and being disempowered and giving your power away to an external force for healing, whether that's a doctor or you've given your power away to the diagnosis that you've received, so you're completely identifying with it. So when you can take your power back and feel empowered in yourself to know, hey, guess what? I can do this. I can tap into this amazing, infinite being that I am and use this gift to heal myself. And it's not always without challenge, you know, it's not always something that happens super quickly. Sometimes it does. Sometimes healing is instantaneous and sometimes it takes a little longer. But the point is that your body is giving you a message. And if you're willing and open to listen to the message and take the inspired action to do the work to heal, then it's going to happen. It's inevitable. But if you're not quite sure, you don't believe it, or you don't know, you know, most people, they just don't really know how to do it because we've never been taught. So
sure.
That's where someone like me comes in, who can be that guide, that facilitator, who has a map, who knows the way and can help you do that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I like what you said there. A lot of us don't believe it can happen because it's, first of all, we haven't seen it. We don't know about it. It's not something that it's taught every day. And so to walk up to somebody and say, well, you know, you have the ability to heal yourself, it's just like, you know, it's yeah. over their head. It becomes gibberish to them yeah. because it's a different language. It's something that
exactly.
we're just not used to thinking that way.
It's a new paradigm. It's a paradigm shift, which I feel like
yes.
we're in many, many ways in our planet right now. It's a different level of consciousness that is required to achieve that. And it doesn't mean that not everybody has the ability to do it, because we do, but it does take some intention on perhaps, you know, raising your level of consciousness from victimhood to, you know, empowered and to being able to be grateful, like you were talking about earlier in your affirmations, already feeling in the present moment, wow, I'm so grateful that my body knows exactly how to heal itself. You know, that's a very powerful statement.
Sure. And I think you're right also. I like what you said there about not giving your power away, because, you know, a doctor will tell you that, hey, well, you got to take this medicine. I mean, the other day I interviewed a young lady, and she was in a terrible car accident. She was told that she'd never walk again. And now she's a competitive, bodybuilder. And she, you know, she walks with a cane. She's got visible, issues with her walking, and there's some things she can't do, but
mm-hmm.
she was able to leave the hospital on her own 2 feet. And that's after having that diagnosis of you'll never walk again.
Right.
So it goes to
right.
show you that,
it's amazing.
That, yeah, things can happen, and that doctors don't know everything.
Right.
And sometimes
right.
doctors really know, you know, they only know what they've studied.
Right. And they only know, I mean, they're coming from a place of, you know, of just empirical data and statistics, which is a great reference to have, but it shouldn't be something, I mean, you can believe it if you want to, but you don't have to. So it's really up to you.
Right.
It's really a choice. Yeah.
And what's really funny too, I'm a big believer that vitamin C, is one of these incredible, products out there to help the body. Right. So I take
sure.
lots of vitamin C. I take like,
yeah, great.
Yeah, 7 to 10,000 milligrams of vitamin C a day. And I've had multiple doctors tell me that could be harmful, but they don't know, you know, when I ask them, well, give me an example, how could all this vitamin C be harmful? They don't really have an idea. And I said, well, do you know anybody who's ever been harmed by taking large, you know, quantities of vitamin C? No, I haven't. But yet they're of that mindset, you know, and
mm-hmm.
and again, it is that mindset. They have been trained to dispense
yeah.
medicine. And
mm-hmm.
when you talk to them about, you know, self-healing or conscious healing
mm-hmm.
or, you know, taking mm-hmm. mass doses of vitamin, they like, wait, you know, that could be bad. I don't know how, but.
Yeah. yeah. Well, yeah, we just have to remember that they have a limited set of skills, just like any person
yeah.
in a profession. You know, they have a certain toolbox, and that's their toolbox. And beyond that, if it's unknown, they're not going to be, probably not going to be on board with it. So I think we need to question things and think for ourselves when it comes to our doctors, because I've heard people of, you know, wanting to ask their doctors about anything and everything in their lives and thinking that they'll know the answer. So doctors are great, but they're not God, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I like the way you said that. Let's talk about this, because I know that you're a believer that that there are different levels of healing. And so talk
yes.
about that. What are the different levels of healing? Why is it important to know about these or address these?
Yes, thank you for asking. So I found in my practice, I have been practicing acupuncture and Chinese medicine for over 10 years, which works in an energetic space, but also physically on the body. And I found that when we only focus on the physical body, healing is short term, or it's almost like a Band-Aid. It's like we're looking at one aspect. So it's almost like you can see those pies in that board game where you have the little pieces of pie. And so the physical aspect of healing, the physical body, is one very important piece of that needs to be paid attention to. And then you've got all these other pieces of the pie, like I was saying before, the emotional, mental, spiritual, and the relational. So the mental piece is, you know, what are the thoughts that you're thinking every day? What are you doing with it? What happens with those thoughts? Are you going to just, you know, digress into those thoughts and downward spiral into, oh my gosh, I'm never going to get better, and I have this thing, and the doctor says I have 5 months to live, and, you know, on and on and on. thoughts are very powerful, as we know. They actually affect every cell in our body because our cells are listening. They actually hear you. Then we have the emotional piece, which is the heart. How are you feeling? And the heart aspect, the electromagnetic field of the heart is actually about 100 times stronger than that of the brain. So our feelings are actually far more powerful even than our thoughts. So what feeling state are we in? And this is, it goes back to the level of consciousness. Are we in a feeling state of we feel like we're a victim to this disease that's happening to us? Or can we find things to be grateful for to move us into a state of love and gratitude that actually gives our body a space, allows our body to heal itself? And we can have emotions that are stored, you know, on the other end, we can have emotions that have been stored for a very long time that are actually creating the illness in our body. So this could be anger or sadness over a very long period of time that actually has an effect on the body, because if we're not moving through it and addressing it, then it just gets stuck. You know, it just gets stuck inside. And of course, then we have the spiritual aspects of healing, which is your connection that you have to that larger part of yourself, to your soul, if you will, your higher self, the part of you that's not physical at all, that always has been, always will be, and always is. So, you know, all of these aspects are important to pay attention to when we're looking at healing. It's not just one thing, it's all of it together. So it's just a very holistic, you know, piece. And then you have the relationships that you have with yourself and with others. And the relationship you have with yourself, I find, is the most important one of all. That's a short version of that.
Well, I like that. So let's talk about this real quick, because I know that you have also created a program called Empowered Healing Method. Talk about what this is.
Yes. So, well, the Empowered Healing Method is a 5-step method that I have created that is part of my online program called the Heal Yourself Now Masterclass. So the Heal Yourself Now Masterclass is a 7-week online program that goes through peeling back, you know, layer by layer, the different levels of healing. So we go through all of these levels I just talked about. Each week, we're focusing on a different, you know, level of healing. The Empowered Healing Method is part of that. The Empowered Healing Method is something I take people through. You can go through it in 5 minutes. It could take you 5 months to go through this. You know, it's a 5-step process. It's the first one is owning your power, and I'll just, you know, say them very quickly. The second one is surrendering to what's happening. That's very important, so we're not fighting it. The third one is loving yourself and what is. The fourth one is listening to the message that your body is giving you. And the fifth one is taking the inspired action on that message. So these are things, as you can imagine, that require some time at each level. And we can go back through it over and over again. But that's what I'm offering to the world now is the Heal Yourself Now Masterclass, because I do believe that each of us has the opportunity to heal ourselves when we put the work in, when we put the effort in.
Yeah, I love that. I love that so very much. Tara, we're out of time, but it's been wonderful to have you on the show today, Tara Long. And Tara, if somebody wants to find out about your services, your products, they go to wideawakenedhealing.com, wideawakenedhealing.com. Is that okay?
Yes, that's
well, wonderful.
Yep,
well, thank
that's
you so much
at.
For stopping by. It's
thank
been a blast.
You.
Looking forward to have you back again.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Aloha.
You bet. Good stuff there about healing yourself, right? And you know, it's interesting because, like a lot of things in our lives, right, it's all that mindset. It's all about that mindset. So if we can believe it, I think we can achieve it. But sometimes it's hard to believe. Sometimes we're not clear. And if we're not clear, then that causes us, again, to not be able to move with certainty, which is important in any endeavor. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break, then we'll be back right after this.
Well, I'm not sure what it is. I guess I'll be okay.
I'm calling the studio, Matthew.
You're not shooting today.
Just get some rest.
He bought it.
Hi, can I get my CRV brought up, please?
Roderick. Roderick.
Life is packed with things you have to do.
But sometimes you gotta live a little.
Matthew, you poor thing. You sound awful.
Hey,
cool.
Look, I don't know what to tell you. He's sick. Actors get sick sometimes.
Thanks.
Have a good night.
Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Get going in the all-new CR-V from Honda.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All righty, folks. We are back. My next guest, Kathy Sexton. Kathy Sexton is a productivity and profit-first specialist, speaker, author, and coach. She works with individuals and organizations to ignite productivity, increase profits, and accelerate results. Kathy uses her passion and empathic nature to help people live healthier, productive lives. Why? Because she knows the health risk of being a workaholic. She lived it, paid a very high price for living that lifestyle. Kathy Sexton, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you for having me, Bert. Exciting to be here.
Well, all right, so let's talk about you first. Give us a little history. How did you get into the field of productivity? Tell us a little bit about your life-changing event here that caused you to wake up and we'd call it reject your workaholic lifestyle.
Well, I call myself a reforming workaholic because it's kind of like an alcoholic. I think I can slip back into that moment any time. But I was, in the corporate world. I was working harder and harder and longer. And I got to the point where I was going in earlier before anybody got there, and I was staying later than anybody just so that I could get things done. And I got diagnosed with a life-threatening disease that basically could have taken my heart, my eyesight. And it was caused and induced by stress. And I really had to take a really good look at my life. And at that point, it's really interesting, I decided to go to quit the job I was in, eventually after, a couple signs of issues. And I started my own business. And people say, but isn't that stressful? But it's my stress. And I can control that much more than I control people in the corporate world. So I now, working with small business owners, that's my goal, is to help other people not go down that same road.
I love that. Yeah, and it is a different stress when it's your stress versus somebody else's stress. And I want to ask you this. So we have the right framing for this. When you think of productivity, what in your opinion is productivity? And also, what is it not?
Okay, so productivity is not, let's start there. Productivity is not about being busy. Productivity is really about being efficient and effective with what you do in the time that you have to do it. So it really is about being diligent, being responsible, and really being focused on what you're doing and how you're doing it.
Gotcha. Yeah, and I think that makes a lot of sense. This mindset, really. And I remember when I was young, working, 50, 60, 70 hours a week was like a thing, man. You were in the club, right?
Yeah.
Got there to the office early. You sacrificed your family and all that other stuff, and you left late. You were like, in that club, and the workaholics club, right?
Yeah, right. As a member, a forming member.
Yes, a reform member. And what's so funny is I think that most people who work these 60, 70, 80-hour weeks are probably no more productive than the people who work a 25 or 30-hour week.
Oh, you're definitely correct. You're definitely correct. Your body and your mind only has so much energy. And, when we're working those long, long hours, our energy level is reduced huge amount. So the more we're working, we're really working less focused, less productively, and we're really draining ourselves mentally. You know, and as you said, it's affecting our families, it's affecting our lifestyle, it's affecting what we, you know, what we really are wanting to accomplish in the long run.
Yeah, it really is. And you know what's frightening? Speaking of productivity, for the most part, you know, I work for myself. I have a small group of people that work with me and stuff like that. And what's so interesting is on more than one occasion, I'm sorry to admit this, on more than one occasion, I have sat at my desk in front of a computer, and at the end of the day, I can't tell you what I accomplished. I mean, I guess I could tell you I didn't accomplish anything or very much. So it's so easy to get busy and not be productive even a little bit.
Well, that's so true. And another thing about exactly what you just said, I hear that a lot. But sometimes, you know, we might have our day planned tremendously and, you know, really be focused on what we're going to get done. And the whole world turns upside down, right? And then at the end of the day, we feel like, God, I got nothing done. I got accomplished. But if we really look back at what we did, as long as, you know, we have accomplished something. So what happens is then it's what you talked about earlier is mindset, is we get into that spiral mindset. I didn't do anything. I didn't get anything done. I worked so hard. And then we get into that spiral of, is this really worth it? And we're putting ourselves in that negative mindset. So the suggestion is, yeah, maybe your day didn't go the way you had planned, but at least really sit down and recognize what you did get done and what accomplishments you made that day. And then some of the things that maybe you didn't do or you should have, you know, not been doing that you spent your time on. But be aware of that. But take it on the positive side. I didn't get done what I expected, but I did do this, and I learned that I really shouldn't put my time here. And then that positive mindset just changes your energy level tremendously.
Yeah, and I think you're right. Sometimes we do beat ourselves up, and I think you hit the nail right on the head. You need to look at your day and say, what did I actually accomplish? Saying that you accomplished nothing is maybe a stretch. I think that when I look back, there have been some days where I might have accomplished more than I thought. But again, I didn't take the time to write it out and figure out, okay, this is what I did, and this is what I could have done better, and this is what my game plan is for tomorrow or whatever. So I think that's a great strategy. Let me ask you this. Let's talk about business failure. In your opinion, why do so many small businesses fail?
Well, I think there's a couple things. One is that they're wearing way too many hats. You know, they don't have systems and processes in place to allow them to transfer those skills to someone else. And I think one of the biggest things is they haven't really made a profitable business model. They might have a business model, but is it really profitable that you're being able to set aside profit, you're being able to set aside and make sure you're getting paid? You know, so many small business owners go in for the love of what they do or whatever, but they tend to not pay themselves, and then they get burnt out.
Yes, absolutely. And I think one of the things you hit on there that is so important is they fail to have a profitable business model. You and I have probably met a lot of people out there who are great at doing what they do, lawyer, plumbing, baker, florist, doctor, but yet they can't market their business. They have no real strategy. They just open their doors and are surprised that, you know, that their business is struggling.
Right. I agree. Definitely.
All right, so let's talk about this. What, in your opinion, is the biggest challenge then for small business owners? Is it a productivity model? We've already talked about having this profit strategy, but give me your thoughts.
So I think the whole thing is that they need to make sure that the hats that they're wearing, because they wear way too many hats, that they're doing the things that are going to make them money. So asking themselves some questions. And the thing am I doing, is it really worth the time, my time and effort? You know, if I put my time and effort here, you know, what is that return on that time, energy, and money? You know, versus paying someone else, to, you know, if it's an assistant or a virtual assistant, or having outsourcing something. You know, one of the biggest things that I think most small businesses do is they try and do their own accounting because it's easy, but then they mess it up and then they spend more time and more money trying to get somebody to fix what they messed up instead of putting their time. You know, if they listed 20 things that they do in a day, probably only 4 of those are probably money-making or really their strength items. And when they can focus on those items and get those done, that's what really causes them to be productive. It makes their business grow, and they're going to be more successful and happier doing what they're doing.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that really helps me, and I know every time I've done this with clients, it helps them out tremendously. With today's technology, there are so many places where you can get help. And when I say help, I mean you can go to Upwork and outsource a graphics job. There's Fiverr. There's several places where you can outsource some stuff, anything from bookkeeping to graphic design to writing an article. All this stuff can be outsourced. So you, as the solopreneur, if you're in that situation, the solo practitioner, can focus on those money-making activities. And I know some people may be listening and saying, well, Bert, I don't have the money to outsource. Well, if you start outsourcing, I guarantee you, you'll be able to focus more on these money-making activities. Therefore, you will have more than sufficient money. It's just one of those things. It just happens, and it's a great feeling. And I think that by outsourcing, and if you happen to have a team already working, then can you outsource to them? Can you delegate more to them? Because once you're able to let go of some of the stuff, you have a much more fun time with your business, and you get to go home at night knowing that you got a bunch of stuff done.
Exactly. I mean, you hit it right on the nail on the head. You know, it really is so important that, you know, I hear it all the time. I can't afford to pay somebody else to do that. But my response is, you can't afford not to. Because they're going to do it more effectively, more efficiently, and they're going to do it better than you ever could do it if that's not your strength. And if you're putting your money
Absolutely.
On the things that you do great, that's, you know, like you said, you're going to make more money to be able to pay those people and pay them well.
Absolutely. No, I like that. All right, so let's talk about this. When you're sitting down with your client, what are the top mm-hmm. things that they need to do to increase productivity? What are some of your big, you know, insights into making us more productive?
Well, I think one of the biggest things is really setting some goals, and setting personal goals first, because your business goals can drive those personal goals will drive your business goals. You know, we say, okay, well, I want my business to do this, but really, what is that going to do to affect you personally? Because that's why we go in business, is for personal reward, for personal benefit, for the lifestyle we want, right? So we really have to understand where we want to be personally in 5, 10, 15 years, and that helps us to set our goals. And then you have to put a plan in place. How am I going to get there? And you have to be willing to... You're going down the road, and you have to really go. Sometimes I have to take a detour because what the road I thought was going to work, you know, it's not working anymore. But so, you know, it's about, you know, really being aware of where you're going, setting some steps to get there, and then having, again, back to what we were just talking about, having other people to help you get there. And if it's through being part of a mastermind, to be able to brainstorm with other people, to be able to delegate the things you're not good at, and then to have a situation where you can stay focused and know every day, these are the things I need to accomplish today so that you can work towards those goals.
Yeah, I like that so very much. And what's so nice about what you just said is that it doesn't require technology. It doesn't need batteries. You don't have to charge it. It's very simple, but yet very, very effective.
Well, and I like to tell people in a lot of it, you know, especially the when I'm helping people set up their profitable business model, it's really simple. Things are really simple. The hard part is the implementation, you know, is our habits,
right,
and our mindset. Those habits and mindsets are what distract us and take us down different roads.
Absolutely, absolutely. Kathy, it's been a blast having you on the show. Looking forward to having you back again, talking more about profit and productivity. Kathy Sexton. If you guys want to find out more about Kathy Sexton, you can go to theproductivityexperts.com, theproductivityexperts.com. Kathy, thank you so much for stopping by.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Good stuff there from Kathy Sexton about profit and productivity. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. My next guest is Ransom Stevens. And Ransom Stevens is going to be our first guinea pig here. He's a best-selling author of the book, The Left Brain Speaks, The Right Brain Laughs. Why is he a guinea pig? Well, because we're going to go live right now on Facebook talking about doing this episode live. You'll be able to see me, hear him. And so hopefully it'll be a lot of fun and engaging. And so I just have to cue this up. So give me a second here while I stall. You can find out more about his book. It's available on Amazon. And again, the book is called Left Brain Speaks, Right Brain Laughs. And I just love this title because it really kind of makes you want to dig into the book and find out what it's all about. Here we go. All right. So we are now live on Facebook Mentions. So you can go to my Facebook page and check us out there. This is going to be an extraordinary fun event. And so Ransom Stevens is a PhD physicist, scientist, writer, novelist, has written hundreds of articles and on subjects ranging from neuroscience to quantum physics to parenting teenagers. Talk about a big, we call it a wide range of ideas there. His latest book, The Left Brain Speaks, The Right Brain Laughs, a look at neuroscience of innovation and creativity in art, science, and life, is an accurate, irreverent look at neuroscience for a lay audience with an emphasis on innovation in art, science, and life. Ransom Stevens, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Oh, thank you very much for having me, and thanks for making me the guinea pig. I am an experimentalist.
Well, you know, I figure as a scientist, you wouldn't mind being the test subject in this particular experiment.
No, not at all.
And plus now people can see the book here live on like I said, on Facebook. And the book, again, is The Left Brain Speaks, The Right Brain Laughs, which I love your title, very creative title. And how did you come up with that real quick?
Well, my original title was The Reality Interface, and the publisher didn't like it. And so I gave a list of titles, and this was one of them. And The Left Brain Speaks, The Right Brain Laughs. You know, the funny thing about it is, though, is that it's not perfectly accurate. As you pointed out, it's a great marketing tool, but what it should really say is that the left brain tells the joke, the right brain gets it, and then the left brain actually does the laughing. But, you know, less marketing appeal, right?
Well, you have to give it to the to your publisher there. I mean, look, titles help sell a book, and what's the point of writing a book if you're not going to sell a few of them?
I yield to expertise.
As we all should, right? All right, let's talk about this, because something else that kind of caught my attention is here you are, you're writing about quantum physics and parenting. So obviously you must be a parent. Is that why you wrote about parenting?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Well, I like the easy problems, you know.
In writing about teenagers, is that the easy one, or writing about quantum physics? Which one was the
exactly.
easy one?
Exactly. Well, you know, there is this theory that the harder something is, the easier it actually is in practice, because if it's impossible, nobody really expects you to do such a great job. But if it's possible, you better get it perfect. So if you're, you know, talking about parenting teenagers, you know, the expectations are pretty low.
You know, and it's so true, because anybody who's ever had a parent teenagers, you know, you no matter what you say, somebody's going to say, yeah, I've been there, done that, know how you feel, you know, there's nothing you can do, good job. the standard is somewhat vague and low at the same time.
Well, they're such a moving target, you know, the development of their brains and their bodies are in constant conflict. And as parents, we tend to be a little bit behind where they are. There's a tendency to parent the child that was months ago or a year ago until there's some sort of, not necessarily a tragedy, but some calamity that wakes you up and gets you caught up with where your kid is at that time. But they're so dynamic. You got to stay up in the clouds and look down and have the big perspective.
Well, let's talk about this, because it seems to me that we're more equipped to let our creative juices flow as, let's say, teenagers or children than we are as adults. Give me some thoughts on that. Why is that?
So it's pretty straightforward. You know, when you're an expert, when you have experience, right, expert, experience, kind of the same word, but when you are an expert, then you know how things work. You can predict them. You understand what's going to happen. And what that does is it closes your mind out to other possibilities. And
other
as experts in our, right, and as experts in our own field, you know, we tend to carry that. Well, let's just call it arrogance, because that's what it is. We tend to carry that into other things we do, even things that we're not experts at. And when we face some new challenge, you know, whether it's an innovative challenge in technology, or it's even an artistic challenge, coming up with a metaphor, or trying to figure out, you know, a sculpture, facing a blank canvas, that what we really need to do is to back off of that experience, that expertise, And let those ideas come. Let them percolate up the way they do as we're children before we're, you know, burdened with the experience of having made a bunch of dumb mistakes as children are prone to do and become better at life.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting too? I think that you can take a child, let's say somebody in elementary school, possibly in junior high, but I don't think, you know, it's not going to be as often or as commonplace in high school, because I think what happens as we start to socialize and we're going through the ranks of, you know, junior high and high school, we start to care about other people's opinions. But when we're young, and let's say in elementary level of school or age, we don't really care, so we're more prone to give our ideas and thoughts out loud because we don't care. We don't care about judgment. The older we get, for a while there, you know, high school, college years, maybe your first 2 years in your career track there, until you're about 35 or 40, other people's opinions, I think, sometimes stifle our work, our creativity, change our opinions. And then, you know, you hit that magical number. I think for me it was around 40, where I no longer cared about what other people thought. I no longer cared about screwing up in front of people or giving a bad idea or telling somebody, honestly, I don't know the answer to that. And when you're able to get back to that place, I think you start to free yourself up. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I totally agree. I've thought for a very long time that people peak at 10 years old. Right then, you know, the brains aren't fully developed, but they're just packed with potential. It's before
right.
the hormones start driving their decisions, and they're brilliant. You know, their brains are still developing, but they're sharp, man. And then there's this period from like 11 to 40 or 45 where, you know, we're working really hard, but we don't really know why. And then some
yeah.
point, often called the, you know, the middle age crisis, where you're kind of like, why the hell am I doing this? Who am I doing this for? And then you start to get some perspective and, you know, you buy yourself a Ferrari. But there is, you know, there's an interesting thing. In writing The Left Brain Speaks, Right Brain Laughs, I found out a lot of really, really cool stuff. And here's one of them that has
okay.
a lot to do with why children are more creative, just naturally more willing to try things and entertain ideas that adults aren't. That we just have a prejudice against a bunch of ideas because in the past they haven't worked. Children aren't biased against those. And this is what's going on. There's this thing called neural pruning. And the idea
Wait,
is this.
Wait, called what?
Neural pruning.
What?
Pruning, like
neural,
pruning
okay.
a
neural
rose
pruning,
bush.
Okay.
Yeah. So the idea is that when an infant has 2 to 3 times more neural connections in their brains than they do when they're 4 years old. And the reason is that they're just kind of randomly reaching out among the senses, among sight, taste, smell, hearing, and touch. And those senses, the input from those senses hasn't been distinguished yet. So they're just random. And they might not even be able to tell the difference between seeing light and tasting milk, that they're just sensations mm-hmm. coming in like crazy into the world, into their minds from the world. And then, as you know, as they get experience, their brains prune away all the extra connections until they refine those 5 senses so that the connections just go to processing those and the connections that don't really make any sense are gone. And so at those ages, from you know infant to 3 or 4 years old, we are literally open to any possibility interpreting the world and almost any way. And so at that point, we really have no prejudices. We aren't prejudging ideas before they come in. So one of the things that we do that inhibits our creativity is that we literally reject ideas before they reach into our consciousness because we're experts and we've trained our gut decision circuitry to reject things that haven't worked for us in the past.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Neuro pruning, that is a new one for me. I really like that, you know, that phrase or whatever. Let me ask you this. Let me back up a little bit. And you've written a couple other books. Why write this one? What was the motivation about writing The Left Brain Speaks, The Right Brain Laughs?
So this came about, you know, just you know, when curiosity starts nibbling at you, you just kind of keep eating. And what happened was I was researching neuroscience for the premise of my second novel, The Sensory Deception. And Sensory Deception is the premise of it is based on the relationship between the senses and the mind. And these characters go and develop virtual reality technology that puts you in the point of view of endangered animals in order to change your politics. Things get out of hand. But anyway, I was researching this premise, so I started reading about neuroscience, and I just kept going. And then when I was pitching this novel to agents, I talked to a publisher who was a publisher of nonfiction books, just to try and, you know, try and get some leverage and a referral. And I started telling her about neuroscience, and we really she was really interested in it. And by the end of our conversation, she said, "Hey, I think you've got a neuroscience book in you." And I said something like, "Really? I'm a physicist. How can I write a neuroscience book? There's a million neuroscience books out there." And she said, "Yeah, but yours would be funny." And so she offered, you know, we met, we talked it over, decided an angle to take, and get a contract, and that's how this book came about.
That's fantastic. I love that. What a great story. I like that. It goes to show
being
you
in the right place at the right time, man.
Absolutely. And you can't be at the right place at the right time unless, you know, you put your foot forward, right? If you would not have had that conversation, it wouldn't have happened.
Yep. That's one of those little pivotal moments in life, and I prefer the way you put it, putting your foot forward. I always tend to put it as sticking your neck out, which is, you know, somewhat more intimidating.
All right, so let's talk about this. In your opinion, or with your research here, what do you find, what are some of the keys that, let's say, unlock creativity or innovation or discovery? And what do you find stifles innovation and or creativity or discovery? Talk about that.
Okay. Well, I think that, you know, the problem with developing a model of approaching challenges is that the world will change in such a way that that model won't work anymore. But it didn't keep me from coming up with a model. So I think that the first thing is to embrace some stress. That nothing comes without stress. A need to innovate, a need to create something is always brought about by some desire, whether it's imposed on you or it comes within. And there's going to be stress, but it's difficult to take a look at a problem that you need to solve when you're stressed.
Sure.
So there's the issue of managing to cool down and evaluate. And once you've evaluated what you're really after, then there's a period of analysis. You need to fill your brain with as much information about the challenge, about this problem you're going to solve. Say you're writing a novel and you're working on a metaphor, some crazy metaphor that will underlie the theme of the entire book. Then you need to assemble all of the plot points, everything you know about your plot, everything you know about the characters, into your mind. And what it does is, it primes all of the rest of your brain, the parts that you're not really conscious of, the parts that process the incoming sensory data into abstract things. You know, when you look at something, say you look at your dog, it's just light reflecting off of your dog and going into your eyes, but that's not what you see. You're not conscious of the whole process of converting that into different colors, into an image, and then identifying with, oh, you see a dog. Right, so there's a lot of things going on in your brain you're just not aware of. In fact, the vast majority of things that your brain does, you're not aware of. You can only be conscious of like 3 to 7, maybe 10 different things at once. So when you analyze the problem and just assemble all the information you can without any prejudice, just gobble it up, and then you're priming all your processors to work on it. All right, so that's the focus part. And then go away. Be focused. So where do you get your best ideas? Where do you get your aha moment? Are you sitting at the desk, pounding away on the computer, working the mic?
No. No, where matter of fact, you know, I think most people, at least from my experience, you know, some of my biggest aha moments come when I'm not even thinking about it, right? My subconscious doing all the work, and all of a sudden it hits you. Man, that's what I need to do, right? Sometimes I've been awoken at 2 o'clock in the morning with the perfect solution.
Yeah, that's it. And that's it. That's why. So what's happening is that when we defocus, we're just letting our brain go and letting it connect all the different pieces. So I sometimes think I should just move my desk into the shower because that's where all my best ideas come. Just get that computer there, put a little water, you know, a little umbrella over everything, type away. But there's another piece. Once you've focused and acquired all this information so that you can train your brain, just tell it what you need it to do, and then you go and defocus, the next step is you need to reduce all of that prejudice you've acquired from, ironically, from becoming an expert at so many things that you're an expert at. That means you have to quiet. So meditation is a really good approach for quieting your brain, stopping the inhibition of ideas that you might not otherwise entertain, and spend a period of time just letting those ideas, just letting them come up. And don't write them down. Just sit there and let them come up for 20 minutes, half an hour, and then write them down. Just don't even think about them. Just let them boil up. And then write them all down again without any judgment of whether they'll work or not. Just get that list. And then you turn around and you go back to focus. Now you go back and you look at what you have, your ideas, and you start evaluating. Right? Aha moments. There's lots of them. We tend to remember the ones that are good, the insights that work, the brilliant ideas. Those are the ones we tend to remember, but a lot of them aren't very good, and you can throw them out pretty quick. But the trick is to throw them out after you've let them come up, because a solution to another problem might be on your page that's not a solution to this problem. So
hey, Ransom,
really
we're out of time.
Reducing inhibition.
I love it. Thank you so much for giving us that insight. The book, again, is called Left Brain Speaks, Right Brain Laughs. It's available at Amazon. It's also available at RansomStevens.com, RansomStevens.com. Ransom, thank you so much for stopping by. I'd love to bring you back and talk more about the Left Brain Speaks, the Right Brain Laughs, creativity and innovation. It's been a blast.
Fantastic. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Good stuff there from our guests today, Tara Long, Kathy Sexton, and Ransom Stevens. I love this book. The Left Brain Speaks, The Right Brain Laughs. You can find it at Amazon or wherever good books are sold. And as always, remember that you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.